It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. As political attack ads bombard the airwaves and digital, we take stock of the Wisconsin Main Street Agenda, a project of USA Today Network Wisconsin Ideas Lab, the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison, and us here at WPR. The project spanned 4 months, 4 town hall meetings, civil political conversations about what voters care about, what they want from elected officials. Join in on questions, takeaways from the Main Street Project, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jim Fitzhenry is Vice President of News and Executive Editor for the USA Today Network Central Wisconsin. Jim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me on this morning.
Good morning. And Rob Mentzer with us as well, Assistant News Director of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, Rob, let's start with you. Last week, the Main Street Agenda hosts a town hall in Wausau, stomping grounds for you. You moderated the panel of 5 Wisconsin voters who talked about their top concerns. What did you find out? What issues are most pressing?
Well, you know, some of what they said they were concerned about is very consistent with what, you know, opinion polls are showing that voters care about in this election. So that was abortion, that was inflation and rising prices. You know, one of the panelists expressed that that to her, the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe v. Wade was significant to women and women's rights, but also as a sign that other freedoms could be rolled back. We see, you know, that certainly is a concern that is animating a lot of voters. But then on a sort of on a broader level, what they were interested to talk about was sort of how toxic political conversations become at this time of year in an election year, or maybe just sort of all the time now. And you know, they expressed that they wanted a place to have a sort of civil conversation, or the ability to actually hear from people who had different views than them in sort of not a shouty cable news way. So I think those were some of the large themes.
Jim, you went to all 4 town hall meetings, took them all in. Can you step back? What is this project's mission and agenda?
Really, what we were trying to do is to do exactly what you said, get away from some of the shouting, some of the toxicity, and to get people actually talking about issues. All these things are deeply connected to how citizens trust the media and how they trust the political process. So we just started this thing, launched it on the 4th of July weekend with just a real simple question of what do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for your votes this fall? And we had about 13 people who actually took the survey, and we had a couple spots on the forum where people could actually leave us comments. And we received, you know, hundreds of really thoughtful comments from people that didn't fit the stereotype about angry voters or people who were disconnected from the process. It was just the opposite, that people are thoughtful. They thought deeply about things, they care deeply. And I think most importantly, people wanted to be heard.
It's interesting you say that, because, you know, Wisconsin, a swing state, we're ground zero for polarization, as we've been called in the media. You've been reflecting on that a bit, that there's more nuance. I'm wondering, what are you discovering through the Main Street Agenda Project? What did you see there, Jim?
Well, it's just that people didn't fit what we might consider people to be like typical conservative or liberals. The issues that they cared about were sometimes surprising, in that people who were concerned about abortion rights and threats to democracy were equally concerned about inflation. And they didn't fit sometimes what you see on cable TV or some of the just generalized things about voters, that people really are more complex and they really do want to be engaged in the process. And I think that there was just a universal sort of sense from people that what they were seeing on TV, especially with just the saturation of the negative ads, didn't reflect their reality.
Hmm. Jim Fitzhenry there and Rob Mentzer here as well. Jim, executive editor of USA Today Network Central Wisconsin. Rob is WPR's assistant news director as we look at the issues that matter most to voters and the Main Street Agenda Project. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Rob, how is the Main Street Agenda Project? How has it impacted your reporting?
Sure. So those 2,000 some people who filled out the survey, they left contact information, and it's quite hard to in reporting to reach people who have who are sort of like not political professionals, but who have these sort of thoughtful views. It's not impossible, but you know, you could sort of like stand on a street corner and maybe you talk to somebody who has thought about this stuff and maybe not, right? Or you go into a diner.
We label them real people.
yeah, right. But the point being, this was a resource for reporters at WPR and I believe in USA Today Network as well to find people who were, you know, who were real people, who were ordinary voters, but who had given real thought to these issues. And so you found people who are sort of experiencing cross pressures. I was writing a story about abortion politics in the midterms, and I spoke to a woman who had been a lifelong Republican and who had worked on Republican campaigns, but whose political views had changed by the Roe v. Wade decision. And she spoke very candidly about how hard it was to change her political allegiances, but this is like, that's happening. And so there were a lot of opportunities to find people who were willing to speak quite candidly about how they were prioritizing different issues in a way that is really interesting and I think valuable. It is different than the way, you know, extremely partisan political types might process those issues.
Yes. And Jim, you know, one of the things that stands out on this survey is the future of democracy. More than 2,200 Wisconsin voters respond, and you get this, concern about the future of democracy. What did you see there?
It was pretty overwhelming, the number of people who did that, the number of people who listed themselves as either Democrats or independents. That was their top issue by a long shot. It was number two for Republicans even. So it was something where people do have a sense, and for different reasons that they listed for that. But across the board, people understood that this is a unique time in our history and that they were worried about it. And mostly because of what we've been talking about, the incivility, and the sense that people can't have good, honest, frank discussions about politics.
I keep wanting to match this up with the Marquette Law School poll findings, and I know that's not apples to apples by any stretch, but the Marquette poll said in the latest one, 58% think the state is on the wrong track, that 34% overall think Wisconsin going in the right direction. Did you find, Rob, an air of optimism or pessimism about our state from the Main Street Agenda?
Well, I think that there's, you know, the sort of wrong track is, there's a lot of different ways you can come at saying that, right? Mm-hmm, so inflation mm-hmm. is very high, gas prices are very high, people are feeling pinched. So that, you know, that might lead someone to think that we're on the wrong track. Somebody who is more, who is on the liberal side of things, who is a Democrat, might think that Wisconsin's on the wrong track because there is this sort of gridlock in the state capitol and Republican control of the legislature, right? So I don't think that there's a lot of signs of what I would call optimism, but I also think that people have different diagnoses for why they're, you know, mm-hmm. what's wrong.
Rob Mentzer is assistant news director of WPR. Jim Fitzhenry, vice president of news and executive editor of USA Today Network Central Wisconsin, as we explore takeaways from the statewide Main Street Agenda Project. Join in on issues you've wanted campaigns to address, issues you care deeply about that got sidelined in the midterms, whether you actually feel Wisconsin is ground zero for polarization, 800-642-1234. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We make space to talk about the Main Street Agenda project that in recent months dug deeply into what Wisconsinites think about and what they feel in this campaign season, what they want from elected officials. The Washington Post summed up in a headline last month that Wisconsin is the incubator for America's tribal politics. Is that so? Do you feel deep divisions in your neighborhood or your community? Join in on the Main Street Agenda Project, what it takes to really listen to one another. 800-642-1234. We have a couple partners on this project. WPR's Rob Menser is here and USA Today's Jim FitzHenry. They stay with us. Jim, breaking down the 2,200 respondents on these surveys, 57% Democrats, 31% Independents, 11% identified Republican. So I'm wondering, are you concerned that few Republicans are being represented in your survey results?
Yeah, what we tried to do is not to represent this as a statistically sound poll. It's a survey. And I think that if you break down each of the groups and what they had to say, Republicans were clearly more concerned about the economy and inflation and other issues like that. So it wasn't designed to be a poll like the Marquette poll is, designed to be a survey and just to listen to people. So the thing that struck me was that the future of democracy for all three groups of folks who took the survey was pretty consistent. So, and I think that the views of Republicans on, you know, the economy and inflation pretty much mirror what things like the Marquette poll are showing. So we would have liked to have got a few more Republicans. We're still actually having people take the survey. We'll close it on election day and take a look and report back all the final results on it. But I think it does give us a good snapshot.
And we have a link to it at WPR.org/mornings. Rob Menser, you also have noted in your look at this that people are talking about raising awareness in a Democracy Day campaign, Democracy Day, Election Day, and some universities even recognize it as a holiday, like no classes on campus and encouraging students to participate in events. What can you tell us there?
Well, so, you know, there is a movement that that some people say that Election Day should be a national holiday, right? And I think that I've heard criticisms of the idea that creates, you know, childcare problems for some people and might actually make it harder for people to get to the polls. But I do think that we ought to be able to agree that we should celebrate the sort of like democratic participation. It really is a cornerstone of our system. And I do think that there should be room for nonpartisan, controversial celebrations, that this is not the only way that we can make our voices heard in our system of government, but it's like a very important one. And I'm for anything that promotes more democratic participation.
We heard from Tom in Burlington, called, couldn't stay with us, and they asked if there's a program perhaps in Madison that encourages young people to get out and vote. They say that they're concerned about young people choosing not to vote, as well as turnout more generally. I'm wondering if you have any insights there, Jim, in terms of what this project, how it connected with a younger set of voters?
Yeah, we had, for the people who actually came out to our town halls, We had a lot of older people. We did have a couple of discussions about young voters, and seems to be some mixed opinions there about that. I see a lot of young people who are super energized and motivated and are part of the process. And a lot of the record voter turnout we're seeing is because young people are involved. A lot of discussions about civics education and what kids actually learn in schools and how much voting and democracy are part of that. That's something I thought would be interesting for some follow-up reporting, of to just see what is a high school sophomore, junior, senior, what do they learn about democracy, and how are they taught to be part of the process? Because one of the things is that people are not actually modeling good behavior right now. Was one of the things that people talked about was that that these town halls provided a place for people to actually kind of talk about the virtues of democracy. And it does include talking with people who you don't agree with, listening respectfully, and having a conversation about things.
Jim Fitzhenry there, Vice President of News with USA Today Network Central Wisconsin. Rob Menser, WPR's Assistant News Director, as we talk about the Main Street Agenda Project. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's listen to one voice from the Wausau Town Hall. This is voter Carolyn Rosenberg, who talked about government regulation over health care and reproductive rights.
If you don't have the freedom to make your choices with your professional, if you have a professional, and a lot of people don't, do you really want the government telling you what to do with your body and in your bedroom? I don't think so.
Rob Menser, do you expect the Supreme Court's overturning Roe to have an effect on voter turnout?
Well, so it's quite clear that it was and is a motivating voting issue for Democrats. So it's also quite clear that it has fallen out of the sort of most important issues that voters list more recently as the election grows closer. So we will know soon enough, right? We will know on Tuesday night. What it looks like now, based on polling, is that it is an issue that has kept Democrats engaged in the election and may drive turnout that some others might have stayed home in a midterm. It's not clear that it's going to be sort of like the controlling issue of the election. That's probably going to be inflation.
Inflation. And Jim, your thoughts there as well, because another thing that came up in the Main Street Agenda was climate change being a key issue, which you haven't seen on the campaign trail. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, that's one of the things that for independents and Democrats was number two of an issue consistently across the board. And I've seen little to nothing discussion about that. And it really stands out because it's something that our partners at La Follette had uncovered when they had done their polling last year, that a growing number of people were concerned about the environment, and that a growing number of conservatives were interested in the environment, climate change, and wanted to see something done about it. And yet there's been little to no discussion about that in the campaign. So I think that gets into one of the big things that this project was trying to take a look at, which is reconnecting politics to what people actually care about, and not the latest poll numbers, not the latest attack ads and things like that. So having the Follett faculty take part in all four of the town halls was great, because they could actually connect the public policy, mm-hmm. which all these issues have deep, important, significant public policy, and talk about that in a context that was often about, weighing choices, weighing things that were happening, was also like really revealing, because it gave people a stronger basis to talk about the issues and to understand them.
Jim and Rob, thank you so much for joining us and sharing this project.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Jim Fitzhenry is Vice President of News and Executive Editor for the USA Today Network, Central Wisconsin. Rob Mentzer is Assistant News Director of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have links to the Wisconsin Main Street Agenda reporting, the recorded town hall meetings, and the agenda questionnaire. Find them at WPR.org/mornings. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. About 9 in 10 Americans say political divisions have become so fraught, so polarized, so bitter that it runs the risk of politically motivated violence. That's from Friday's Washington Post ABC News poll. Over 6 in 10 respondents were very concerned about a heightened risk of politically motivated violence in our country. Join in on mixing anger and politics. What stands out to you? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ryan Martin is a psychology professor at UW Green Bay. He is an anger researcher. Ryan, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me.
Why does politics elicit such strong emotions?
Yeah, well, you know, people get angry around politics for the same reasons they get angry around lots of things. People get angry when they are treated unfairly or treated poorly, when someone they care about is treated unfairly or poorly, or when their goals are blocked. And because leaders, politicians, and others have so much power over us to treat people unfairly or poorly, to block people's goals, people are likely to experience anger around those things.
I wonder, what place do you think does anger have in our society? I mean, should we welcome anger into our elections process, or does that common good depend on us from suppressing those strong emotions or excluding anger?
Yeah, I think it's really, really important when we have these conversations to talk about and acknowledge the difference between the emotion of anger and the things people often do when they are angry, meaning the violence you alluded to before, the potential for violence and other forms of aggression. I think it's completely understandable that people would become angry throughout the political process. I do think there are lots of things that politicians do that increase that anger, and we should talk about those things. But I do think it makes perfect sense that people would get angry. Elected officials and other leaders have the potential to really demonstrably impact people's lives in negative ways. And when that happens, or when there's the potential for that, it's hard to imagine not getting angry.
How much does anger motivate people to go vote? Does it actually boost political participation?
It absolutely does. And we've known this for quite a while. So in 2012, researcher basically found that an ad designed to make someone angry was twice as likely to get a click. This is an online ad. Twice as likely to get a click than one that was more neutral. And so if you just think about that purely from an economic perspective, if you're a campaign manager, it makes sense that you would try and elicit that emotion from people. It basically means that your ad is going to be more effective. It's going to encourage people to get out to the polls. At the heart of it, our emotions, whether we're talking about anger or fear or even something else, they're motivators. That's a big part of what they do for us. So the same way my, hunger encourages me to eat, or my thirst encourages me to drink, my anger motivates me to try and change.
That basic. I'm wondering, there was the survey, the University of Colorado Boulder study last year, showing angry politicians create angry voters. Why might politicians and their campaigns want to create angry voters?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things that are happening here. One is what we were just talking about how anger is a motivator. If you're an angry politician and you want to get your people to the polls, it makes sense to rile them up as much as you can. And I also think it's worth noting, that isn't just happening around elections, that happens around other sorts of events. It's riling people up to protest, it's riling people up to go to city council meetings or school board meetings. That's an approach and a strategy politicians are using. The other piece of this, though, is the modeling element, meaning that if you're a leader who tends to express your anger in a really aggressive, hostile way, that motivates your supporters to also express their anger in that hostile, aggressive way.
So there is a mere reflection going on there. Can the politician go too far in riling people up?
Oh, I absolutely think so. I mean, I think the last few years has definitely shown us how quickly anger can turn to violence, especially when people aren't necessarily trying to stop that violence or aren't working hard enough to rein that in and pull that back.
Mm. We're talking about the psychology behind anger toward politics. And during election time, we have anger researcher and UW Green Bay psychology professor Ryan Martin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's listen to a clip here. UW Madison journalism and mass communications professor Kathleen Culver recently was on Central Time to talk about political ads this election cycle. And you mentioned the click on ads. Here's Culver talking about the use of fear in political ads.
We as citizens are right to question these kinds of ads and ask, what is it that someone is trying to stoke in me? You know, what does it mean that someone is playing to my fears, and how might that affect my vote?
Can you walk us through how closely related are fear and anger?
Yeah, that's a great question, and she makes a great point. I think that, first of all, anger and fear are very, very closely related. In some ways, they're sort of, first of all, they feel physically very similar to one another. You know, one of the probably the biggest difference is the provocation, the thing that brings it out of us. And a lot of that has to do even with our own perceptions. And really, you know, we get scared when we think we are in danger. We get angry when we think we have been treated unfairly or poorly or experienced this injustice. And I think, though, that ultimately both of those, the desire to provoke those feelings sort of come from the same place. It's about motivating people to do the things we want to do. And I think she's correct that we want to be aware of why someone is trying to stoke that fire within us, in what way they're using that to manipulate us.
Is there a link between anger and political bias? Like, how much can anger influence what we want to hear? What information that, you know, boosts our current outlook, or, you know, what we would rather not address? I mean, what is the link between political bias?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things we really have to pay attention here. Now, I started out by saying we get angry over politics for very similar reasons as anything else, and that is absolutely true. I think there's a couple of things we really have to pay attention to coming from the politicians who are trying to manipulate our emotions. One is the tendency for exaggerated claims or even just flat out dishonesty, and the way in which that can impact or affect people's emotional experience. And so those claims that people make about themselves or about their opponents really are driving up that anger. And people then aren't reacting necessarily with accurate information in mind. The other piece is, I think, related to what you were just saying, the selective attention piece, that we aren't paying attention to the full story. And social media has made this so much worse that people are living in this echo chamber. And so, again, they're reacting to a very, very small version of what might be really going on. And it's being fed not just by the politician, but by their peers. And the social media algorithms that tend to drive that anger. A final thought too related to this is this tendency to feel really isolated around elections. You know, one of the interesting things that happens during an election is you get essentially a real live count of how many people out there agree or disagree with you. And it can, I think, feel really isolating and really frustrating to find yourself living in a place where, you know, you see so many other people who feel so differently than you do about matters that are really important.
Hmm. Let's take a call now. Mark in Door County. Mark, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Very interesting this morning. My question is, I'm getting fed up with the angry ads, the calls for violence and such. Is this eventually going to blow back where people like me just say, that's enough? I'm not going to vote for anybody that's trying to scare the hell out of me anymore.
Mark, thank you. What do you make of that sentiment, Ryan?
Yeah, I think it's a common sentiment. I mean, I absolutely think it is. In fact, most people I hear say something similar, which is I'm fed up and I'm tired. I think the problem is that, and the reason I'm not optimistic that it's going to come to an end anytime soon is because I think they've got evidence that it works. And that it encourages people to go to the polls in the way they want them to. And so I think as long as it continues to work and as long as it's allowed, people are going to keep using it.
UW-Green Bay psychology professor Ryan Martin researches our anger tendencies, what that means for politics, Wisconsin politics. Join in on why we get mad, how you think we can use anger as a force for good in government and politics. 800-642-1234. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We talk about the consequences of anger ahead of tomorrow's midterm elections. President Joe Biden, in a speech near the Capitol Wednesday, said the midterms are a defining moment for democracy and condemned people who spread false information about the 2020 election.
Lies of conspiracy and malice, lies repeated over and over to generate a cycle of anger, hate, vitriol, and even violence.
Join in on political anger, the state of democracy, 800-642-1234. We have anger researcher, psychologist Ryan Martin, who stays with us. Ryan, reflecting on anger and violence and what happened to Paul Pelosi, husband of U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, attacked with a hammer by a person with political motivations. How concerned should people be that anger in politics drives toward violence?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should be very concerned. Stories like that, stories like things like January 6th, those are real and they're frightening. And oftentimes they are driven by anger and they are driven by misinformation. And they're also driven, though, by, I think, a strategy and a willingness to be violent. And so I think one of the things, you know, anger doesn't always and doesn't even often lead to violence. There's lots of ways to express anger that aren't aggressive and that aren't even necessarily hostile. And so it's more than anger. It's a willingness to do things like use your anger in a way that hurts someone.
Hmm. How can you turn anger into a force for good? What do you see there? Can it be a positive tool?
Yeah, it absolutely can. And we have seen that time and time again, that anger is often a motivator behind protests and by real, you know, social change and efforts for social change. I think that the emotion itself in some ways gets a bad rap. This is one of the most important things I would say is that I don't know that people necessarily want to reduce their anger over politics. I think that election results have very, very real consequences. And it's okay for people to be angry about those consequences. I think what matters more is how they tend to express that anger. Is that anger going to be productive? Is it going to be healthy for them? Is it going to be healthy for the people around them? And I think what we've been seeing lately is a willingness to use violence as a means of getting what you want, instead of trying to move towards some of those more productive approaches.
Let's take another call. Nate is joining us from Milwaukee. Nate, hi, what's on your mind?
Hi, thank you very much for having me. One of the things you'd mentioned about misleading people and using their anger, I was going to say that I think it's a very good thing that we have fact-checking organizations so that when political figures say things, we can try to figure out if it's true or not. If you don't mind me using an example, September 16th, PolitiFact titled "Green Energy Policies Didn't Cause Record Prices at Gasoline Pumps," when PolitiFact rated a comment of Ron Johnson's mostly false about why prices were going up, and he was blaming Biden. And I look at this and I think this is scapegoating, where there is a problem and you end up having two issues with scapegoating being unhelpful, because if you're lying about the main cause of the problem, you're not fixing the gas prices in the first place. In the meantime, you are directing anger towards people who are actually trying to address a real problem and hampering their efforts. Mm-hmm. And so people really should be aware of scapegoating. And I think fact-checking is one of the ways where you can make sure that's not going on, or if it is going on, how is it being done potentially?
Nate, thank you for that. Ryan, what are your reflections there on scapegoating?
Yeah, I agree with this caller 1,000%. I mean, I think that people need to do the work. We should have, there should be an obligation that we are reacting to accurate information. And I think one of the things we've seen over the last few years is a lot of anger emerging because of people believing false claims. And I think that if you find yourself feeling angry, especially over information you've learned via ads or via social media, I think you've got to do the work of making sure that information is accurate. And to the caller's point, there are relatively easy ways of doing that work. I understand not everybody is going to believe the fact-checking orgs and so on, but still there are relatively easy ways of doing that work, because that is those exaggerated claims or even those flat-out lies. And I think the other thing I would say about the caller's point, which I think is a really good one, is, you know, anger on some level exists to alert us to the fact that there is a problem. And the caller's point that, you know, if we're angry over the wrong thing, and or if we don't understand the nature of that problem, we aren't directing the resources we need to help solve it.
Can we just spend a moment here on social media platforms, their role, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, just aren't they reflecting who we are, what we think, and the divisions that are already there among us? What is the role of these platforms for elevating anger?
Yeah, I think that they really, social media platforms do a lot of things when it comes to our emotions. One is that they give us a lot of information to react to. I think we become aware of provocations that we might not have been aware of, say 15 or 20 years ago, because our social media feed is directing them to us. They also elevate a lot of those exaggerated claims or those lies. That misinformation ends up being in our radar in ways that it maybe wouldn't have been 20 years ago. But the other thing is that it provides people a venue to express their emotions. And so we see that it sort of feeds itself in this troubling way. That, you know, not only am I taking in information that way, but I could potentially express my emotions that way as well. It really, I think, honestly, it puts a lot of responsibility on the user to again, do the work of making sure they're reacting to that accurate information, making sure that those false claims, that they're catching those false claims.
Some would say, oh, just disengage from social media, ignore it. And I'm wondering if that is practical advice. I mean, can you disengage without disengaging from the political process?
You know, I think it is, that is not necessarily practical advice. I mean, I think people can choose how much media they want to consume. And I think that we should make healthy decisions for ourselves around how much media we want to consume. It feels almost impossible to, because it's not just social media, it's television, it's Hulu, it's anywhere that there are ads that end up feeding that. So I don't know how practical it is in a lot of ways. But that said, I mean, I think that I don't know if it's practical to completely disengage. And I also think that, you know, you may not want to completely disengage, especially if you're someone who believes in the value of democracy and wanting to participate in the process. But that said, we can make informed choices about who we follow and who we're paying attention to and how much time we're spending there and what it's doing to us.
It's so tempting to stay glued to social media or TV or radio for the latest updates on election news on election night. How do you balance that craving with your normal routine on a Tuesday? What advice do you have?
Yeah, you know, I think that, first of all, I think be aware of what that time is doing to you and how it's impacting you. And, you know, and whether or not there's anything you can do with that information. You know, I voted a few days ago, and because I voted early, you know, I'm at a point now where I'm not really paying attention to a lot of that stuff because it doesn't necessarily, it doesn't matter to me in my vote at this point. I think so, be aware of what impact that is having on you and whether or not it's good for you and whether or not it's necessary. Final thing I'd say, though, is that a lot of the tried and true approaches for dealing with anger more generally are still going to work here, right? The deep breathing, the relaxation, the finding a pause before you respond to things, grounding, all those things are still valuable and can help work if you want to reduce your anger in that moment. And I say that even when that anger is justified, those basic approaches are still going to work for people.
Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ryan Martin is a professor of psychology at UW Green Bay. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.